Welcome to the FishExplorer.com's Fly Fishing Podcast. This is a show where we talk about everything from how to fish, where to fish, what to fish for, and whatever else we want to talk about. We will talk to the legends of fishing, guides, fishermen, and anybody else who wants to talk fishing. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Good morning, evening, afternoon, wherever you are out there in the World Wide Web. This is Tim Fishman Emery, and you have joined the Fish Explorers Fly Fishing Podcast, or Fishing Podcast, here at www.fishexplorer.com. If you're just finding us on the web or iTunes or wherever you are, the website is fishexplorer.com. We are the number one resource in fishing information in the state of Colorado, and all the fishing information you need about how to learn how to become a better fisherman. So that is what's going on. And today we've got a special guest, and I happen to be sitting in Denver, Colorado right now, looking out my window at snow. There's an inch and a half of snow on the ground. It's cold, it's gross, and all I can think about is going fishing somewhere in the warmth. And my guest today has actually just done that recently. My guest is a famed fisherman, author, videographer, everything. Owns a shop in Silverthorne, Colorado called Cutthroat Anglers. My guest today is Mr. Trapper Rudd. How are you, Trapper?
Hey, buddy. I'm good, good. How are you? I'm sorry to hear it's snowing.
Yeah, I know, I'm sure, because you're sitting in Florida where it's probably warm and 80 degrees, right?
Well, you're close, 82, yeah.
So you've had the amazing life, and recently you just got a chance to go to some place that people probably don't even think very much of about going fishing, especially fly fishing. You went to Africa, and you went to the Zambezi River in Mozambique. How does somebody like you figure out to go to Africa?
Well, you know, part of it's just, you know, one of the cool things about being in this industry is, you know, especially being a guide, is you establish these awesome contacts around the planet. So, you know, through angling accomplishments and word of mouth and meeting people, you kind of, you know, build up this network of friends. And you know how it is when somebody says to you, hey, you know, I got this awesome fishery, you ought to come check it out sometime. Well, I'm one of those guys that does. Mm-hmm. So be careful, bud, if you invite me somewhere, because chances are I'm going to take you up on it. And that's kind of how this happened. You know, I fished in Africa back in 87 and kind of did spent almost a year exploring the lower half of that continent. And then, as it just kind of turns out, some mates of mine that run a operation in South Africa and in the Indian Ocean invited me over, and I took them up on the opportunity, and it kind of just all started and fermented right there.
Wow.
But Africa, yeah, it's really amazing. You know, I have to tell you this, you know, with the advent of Google Earth and all these other wonderful tools, you know, on the internet, you can really kind of expand your horizon in fly fishing, especially, you know, and there's a lot of uncharted and unexplored territory still out there. And that's kind of, you know, what I love to do is go find these little nooks and crannies of the world where, you know, there's these incredible angling opportunities and go capitalize on them. And that's really kind of what drove my interest in going over there, was seeing a new species of fish, a new river, and just soaking in, you know, the entire offering, you know, and Africa is just, it's staggering. It's so overwhelming. You know, I mean, to go there just for, I think I was there for 12 days, is still really an injustice. I mean, you really need to go there and spend a couple of weeks and try to absorb everything that beautiful continent has to offer.
So talking about fish, you know, what kind of fish did you go after, and what is the fishery like?
Well, you know, they have an amazing fishery in South Africa itself, and some of the surrounding countries. You know, they have yellowfish, which is kind of like a carp almost. They have the tigerfish, which is what I was targeting while I was there, which is Think of the tiger fish like this. It's kind of like you take a big striper.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of looks like a striper. And then you put this awesome set of teeth. You smash these teeth in the front of it like a piranha, but longer teeth. And then you give it the spunk and the tenacity of a smallmouth that weighs 15 pounds, and you've got a pretty good idea of what a tiger fish is like. They're just an amazing game fish. They're very, they're not very well known. You know, we actually have one mounted in the shop up in
right.
Silverthorne, and people always come into the shop and they think it's like a jackalope. You know,
right.
like when you're going on the tour of the Grand Canyon with your folks when you're a kid and you stop at those hokey stuckies and those little tourist traps along the way and you find a jackalope, you know. People often come to the shop and say, is that really a real fish? And you have to kind of, you know, take some time to explain to them that, yeah, it's called a tiger fish. And actually, tiger fish is kind of a cousin of the golden Dorado that
right.
you find in South America. You know, I think when the you know, plate tectonics kind of drove the two areas apart, you know, they kind of both evolved in their own environment. So they're you know, fairly related in there. So it's an incredible fish, staggering. It's so cool to catch them. It's amazing.
And those tusks, those teeth are like inch and a half long or something like that? Or
yeah, they're kind of, you know, I'd say that on the bigger fish, they maybe get up to about 3/4 inch. Not so
right.
much like a Payara, but
okay.
but just these, you know, these more, not so much hypodermic looking, but a little more angular and a full set of them.
Right.
And the interesting thing about the tiger fish is they actually lose their teeth and replace them similar to a shark. I caught several that were almost toothless.
Wow.
Which was bizarre because they'd have these little red dots on their gums, almost like when your kids, you know, when your kid lose teeth and the new adult teeth start coming in. So, you know, we'd catch some every once in a while that would have, you know, many of their teeth missing and you know, look kind of
wow.
funny. You know, you wanted to give them some dentures. But the, you know, the Zambezi River is one of the best places where you can find these fish. And how I got there was, you know, I flew from Atlanta to Johannesburg. And then from Johannesburg flew up to Lusaka in Zambia, excuse me, and then from Lusaka, it's another charter kind of flight for an hour or so into a little frontier village called Luangwa Fiera, and it's kind of on this confluence of the Luangwa River and the Zambezi, and then from there we cross over by boat into Mozambique, and then hit up this this hunting camp where we operated and staged out of called Chiwalo. And it's an amazing experience because just getting there, you know, really the best part about destination angling is just the experience and getting
right.
there. And, you know, this was a lengthy trip. It took it wasn't all that difficult, you know, in terms of, you know, I didn't have to suffer to get there. It was, you know,
right.
all modern conveniences, you know, getting there. But really, it's the cool thing is as you travel and get closer to your destination, you just realize how much you're stepping back in time. And really, when you get to these frontier villages and you get on these rivers, it's like stepping into the Stone Age. I mean, people live so simply.
Right.
And so they're so contented, you know, with what they have. It's really an eye-opener. And I really appreciate that kind of cultural aspect of destination fishing. That's what really appeals to me the most.
Right. So you get all the way to this camp, and it's a frontier camp, so you're living out there. Are there wild animals coming to the camp and seeing you guys, or is it kind of a little bit, you know, tell me what exactly it's like, because, you know, I've never been there. I've only seen movies and pictures of it, and just kind of curious, what is that kind of 12 days like?
Well, it's, you know, we're in a hunting camp, so we actually had, you know, structures to stay in. You know, we'd sleep under mosquito nets, but you have a thatch roof and block walls, you know, with the hot and cold running water, believe it or not, which is great. But, you know, everybody else, you know, in the villages, you know, that live along and thrive along the river, you know, they're still in the mud, clay rendezvous. you know, with the round thatch roofs and the mud walls, and it's just really amazing to see this kind of culture that you know most people really don't get to share, and that's really the greatest part of it. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about this river is, you know, the Zambezi starts way up above Lake Victoria, and then it kind of flows down into Lake Kariba, and then continues on where it has a dam, and then it continues on down to Cahora Bassa, which is kind of the lake with another dam. It's kind of like a small Lake Powell, if you will. Mm-hmm. It kind of floods back up into these valleys. The area is, you know, fairly mountainous, low-lying mountains, but, you know, it kind of flooded up all these arroyos and everything else. And we were fishing the area where it kind of comes into the lake, and there's all these braids in there. And it's very big. It's very wide. It's several kilometers wide there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got all these islands in the middle with channels and lagoons and these gigantic reeds called phragmati that grow up along the banks. And here's the cool part. You know, where else do you get to fish where you're drifting by pods of 20 hippopotamus, 15-foot-long crocodiles? This is no joke. I mean, mm-hmm. it is really kind of a security issue while you're fishing. You got to be very careful. You know, the hippopotamus do more damage than any creature in Africa in terms of damage to human beings.
Right.
So you got to kind of tread lightly and pay attention to where you're fishing, but it's amazing because sometimes you'll see elephant come right down to the river.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see impala. You'll see kudu. You'll see baboon. You'll see warthog. You'll see water buck. And it's almost, you know, it's so distracting. You can almost not keep an eye on your fly line.
Right.
And because you constantly find yourself just looking around at all the wildlife.
Huh. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome, and really the neat thing about fishing it is, you know, you're doing a lot of blind casting, especially mm-hmm. at this time of year. We're kind of in the end of the dry season, now they're starting into their wet season. So it has that real kind of iconic African feel to it, mm-hmm. you know, like everything you've seen in the movies and kind of what you grow up with learning about Africa here in the States. You know, it's just like that. Baobab mm-hmm. trees everywhere and the scrub kind of brush. And it's just like you're surrounded by this, you know, primeval feeling of life and death hanging in the balance, you know, around every bend in the river.
Right.
And it really is. It really is that way. And then, you know, you've got this incredible tiger fish that lives in the water. And we throw a lot of sinking lines.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of 600, you know, type 6 sinking lines with, say, a black whistler or a blue and white whistler,
mm-hmm.
Kind of a bait fish imitation. The lake itself is full of a small fish called the capenta,
mm-hmm.
and the capenta is kind of the main forage fish for the tigers. And they get very, very big, but what's really neat is even the smaller fish, fish that weigh, you know, 2 kilos, excuse me, or even a kilo, you know, a kilo and a half,
mm-hmm.
will take every inch of that 9 weight and bend it over for you.
Wow.
And you have to remind yourself that you're throwing a 9 weight and you can't believe how deeply these fish can put a bend all the way down to the cork,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you're hooking these things. And then when you get into the 5-kilo fish that break, you know, the 10, 11-pound mark, and the 6-kilo fish, it's just lights out, and they jump.
Mm-hmm.
So the you know, and I actually did a lot of exploring with the spinning rod as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that the fly fishing, I thought, was much more productive because the fish, with that huge set of teeth, can actually inhale the fly.
Right.
As where if you were throwing some of the spinning gear, you know, you've got this kind of more heavily weighted body, right, mm-hmm. on the lure itself, and then the treble hooks. And I think that if they did get the treble hooks past their teeth to where mm-hmm. they actually hook them, then the actual weight of the lure would kind of dislodge it in their violent jumping. So for me, it was just a much more productive thing to throw the fly than it was the spinning gear.
Right.
And
right.
It really kind of interesting because you wouldn't think about it that way, but they literally just kind of chew their way up your fly until they hit the point, and then
right.
the hook point, and then you got them.
Huh. Huh, amazing. Now, what size flies were you using? Are they pretty big, 2, 3, 4 inches, or are they small?
Yeah, they were fairly large flies. Mm-hmm. Most everything I threw was tied on a 2-aught hook.
Mm-hmm.
And again, because their mouths are so bony,
mm-hmm.
you know, you don't want to throw really a lot of the curved hooks. You know, mm-hmm. you want to throw more of a J hook as opposed
right.
to kind of a closing up a circle hook.
Right.
So you get a better hook set and better penetration because you really, you know, once you feel them and they hit it like a freight train,
right.
you know, you're strip striking with all your might
right.
To try to hit that hook and then hang on to them. You bow to them just like you would a tarpon when they mm-hmm. come out of the water. And, you know, of course, they head for the structure, you mm-hmm. know, and they get you wrapped up in all these phragmati weeds. And, you know, so you really got to put the brakes on them and try to wrench them out of there like a snook or
right.
a bass.
Right.
You know, so it's exciting. It's just, you know, there's no two act the same, and there's always some kind of problem you're going to run into once you hook one. You know, there's always something to impede your success, and that's
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, if you end up landing, you know, say 2 out of the 10 you've hooked, you're doing well.
Yeah.
And that's just the way they are. They're just difficult to hook. They're difficult to find. They kind of roam around, you know, and roam the river in packs.
Right.
So they'll be in a particular run for a period. It maybe as they're traveling through,
mm-hmm.
and then they might not be there even an hour from then.
Hmm.
So they're difficult to locate, but man, it's worth every waking moment.
Right.
They're a apex predator, and everybody should get over there and try to experience it. That's for sure.
Do they hit the surface and boil on the surface at all during the year?
You know, there's not a lot of surface activity, and I was a little dismayed by that because I really kind of had fantasies about, you know, these incredible blow ups on poppers.
Uh-huh.
You know,
right.
and it's just not the way they feed, and the grass and the reeds kind of grow out over the river, so it makes mm-hmm. this kind of floating terrain. So it's difficult to, you know, you got to kind of fish on the edges of it and try to lure them out. So you're doing mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, swinging down, trying to get your fly kind of underneath those grass mats and try to lure them out that way. And so, you know, I really wanted to throw poppers, but it just wasn't the most effective way to fish either.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I can't even fathom that being out there. So the guys who are run, and I take it you went with some native guys or some local guys?
Well, the guys that run the operation, they have a couple of guys that are actually in this particular camp for a couple
mm-hmm.
of months.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have native South African guys that were driving the boats for us and putting us on top of the fish. And you know, we just kind of took it from there. But they know where the drop-offs are. And they use a lot of fish finders, just
mm-hmm.
not so much to locate the fish themselves because they're always so mobile. But it shows them where you find these submerged channels.
Mm-hmm.
And where we found these bigger drop-offs, say going from 2 meters down to 8 meters in depth, that's kind of the terrain where you'd find the tiger fish stacked up on.
Mm-hmm.
So without that fish finder, it would have been much more difficult because we would have probably spent an inordinate amount of time blind fishing as opposed to just a ton of time blind fishing.
Right, right, right. And those guides that are with you are watching out for the hippos and the crocodiles and so forth.
Well, you know, in the guide world, we have what you kind of refer to as A&P eyes, and that's, you know, you have one eye looking at the Atlantic and you got one eye looking at the Pacific, you know, so you kind of, you know, gotta be both places at once. And that's really, you know, they do a stellar job of that. And you know, the hippopotamus, you know, are fairly aggressive. And when they start posturing, you know, you gotta kind of back off where you're fishing a little bit. And the crocodiles like to slide in off the big clay mud banks and kind of disappear. But, you know, when you're talking about a 15-foot crocodile, you know, it's fairly easy to keep your eye on them until they kind of slide far enough under the water. But for the most part, you know, it's very safe. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, with just some awareness while you're out there fishing, you know, you're going to do just fine. And it's really, you know, an experience that you don't have to worry about. You know, you're in really good, capable hands.
great. So tell us, if somebody like me, Average Joe, wants to go do this adventure, who do I get a hold of over there? How do I get this thing set up? What makes it easier and so forth?
Well, you know, the operation, my friends over there, they run an operation called Fly Castaways, and really they're in my mind the only group to use. They're first rate, and they've been doing it for a long time. They also run a wonderful operation over in the Indian Ocean, you know, in the Seychelles, and so they really have the game dialed in well. They know what they're doing. They run a tight ship, and really it's not that difficult to get there. You know, you can contact Fly Castaways, or you can call me or contact me at Sporting Life Adventure Travel, and you know, we'll make sure we get you over there to do some tiger fishing, because really, Tim, you know, it should be on every angler's bucket list. It's one of those things you got to go do. It kind of makes you a more appreciative and well-rounded angler, and it's just it's a destination that everybody should really try to get to.
Well, I can't wait. Hopefully someday in 15, 20 years, I'll be on the other side of the microphone and telling people stories about the places I get to go. So I'm looking forward to that stage of my life.
Yeah, buddy, me too, and I hope I'm standing next to you when it happens.
Uh-huh. So, Trapper, I appreciate your time. Trapper, you own Cutthroat Anglers out of Silverthorne, Colorado. Tell us the phone number up there and the website up there, and then we'll get you out of here so you can get back to work.
No problem, buddy. The easiest website in the world, and that's fishcolorado.com. Mm-hmm. And the toll-free number is pretty easy to remember, too. It's 888-876-8818. And feel free to call during normal business hours, and we'll be more than happy to help you out.
Yep, and you guys fish all winter long, which is great, and you're open every day. And I like coming up there in the winter and hanging out, because you guys are definitely friendly up there, and it's a nice, easy day to get up there and talk for a little while, fish for an hour, come in, get warm. It's a lot of fun up there in Silverthorne.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like having a warming hut right on the river.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Yep.
We love it. You know, it's not, as we tell people all the time, you know, they walk in the front door and they go, can I come in with my boots on? And we say, well, we're not a museum. We're a fly shop. Come on in.
Good deal. Well, Trapper, I appreciate all your time. We'll talk to you soon after your next adventure. And as always, you know, stay safe out there and have a lot of fun.
Thanks, brother. I'll call you from Origins Unknown for the next one.
All right. That sounds good.
All right, brother.
Thanks. There are a few guys in the world of fishing and the industry that get a chance to have developed their careers as Trapper Rudd has, and now he's definitely taken advantage of it. I know he's worked hard for a long time, but wow, to be able to do what he does, go to exotic places. He goes to Mexico all the time and Florida all the time, and someday. Anyways, this week was a special week for me. I actually got to go fishing for a full day. In fact, I went fishing with Chad LaChance, our own Chad LaChance, and the Fishful Thinker TV show. We did film. We did go to the Dream Stream, which this time of year is really hopping. The fish were in. The flows were about 75, so it was a little low. It did get pretty windy, and it was very sunny, but about 2:30 in the afternoon, a blueing olive hatch came off. That was spectacular. There were, 12 to 14-inch rainbows rising everywhere, and you know, it was great. Now, the cool thing about this trip was I did go with Chad, and Chad brought his spinning gear. And I know a lot of fly fishermen out there going, what the heck? You went out with a spinning gear guy? Yes. And Chad and I fished shoulder to shoulder the whole day. Had a blast. We both caught fish. He caught bigger fish. I probably would have ended up catching more if he wasn't in my way all the time. But that's okay. But it was spectacular. We had good weather besides the wind. But he was throwing a little tube jig and a little jerk bait. and he was getting hit in follows everywhere. I was throwing betas type patterns, getting those fish on top. I threw some nymphs, but didn't have as much success as I did when those fish started coming up for those blue wing olives. So it was a great day. All in all, the Fishful Thinker TV show will be airing sometime in January. Don't know exactly when, but appreciate Chad's help and his cameraman, Tim, for taking care of us. And there'll be a big surprise at the end of that show that you'll love to see. And I think hopefully there'll be some good footage of me hooking up on top as well. So you'll have to look for that. In the meantime, we had a good snowstorm this week. For some people, it's good. For me, I'm over it. I'm ready to move to Florida already. If we've got this much snow in the Highlands Ranch area in the middle of October, I think we're in for a long winter, but that just means more ice fishing for everybody. So, in the meantime, get prepared for ice fishing season, and we'll talk about that more in the weeks to come. Get prepared for ISE, which is coming up, and of course, tell all your friends about the fishing podcast here on fishexplorer.com. And if you have any questions or comments, please email me at tim@fishexplorer.com. Have fun, have a great day. In the meantime, get out there and go fishing.